A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
As Harry Potter approaches his 40th birthday, we ask, has he been a wizard with his finances? If you're contemplating a dry January, our expert reveals how the savings could fund your next holiday. And where can you find the best value gym membership? Keep listening for the full financial workout. Hello and welcome to the first FT Money Show podcast of 2020. I'm James Pickford, Deputy Editor of FT Money. 2020 is the year when the oldest millennials begin to turn 40, and among them, none other than Harry Potter, who, as superfans will know, was born on July the 31st, 1980. But has he been a wizard with his finances? Here to speculate on his financial future is Moira O'Neill, Head of Personal Finance at Interactive Investor. Welcome, Moira.
Hi, James.
So, this is obviously a fictional character. Yeah. How much do we know about how wealthy Harry is likely to be these days?
Okay, well, I got the help of lots of Harry Potter expert websites that trawl through the novels to try and find all the details about his wealth. I mean, obviously, the most famous point about Harry is his parents left him a fortune when they were sadly killed by Voldemort. Maybe I shouldn't have said that name. But yes, they left him a vault full of gold galleons, which he discovered when he was 11. And, you know, to that, to the young boy, it seemed like a fortune. But Potter fans have estimated it was worth £870,000. So that's not exactly entirely enough for a lavish lifetime, is it? But he, you know, at school he did very well. He won this Triwizard tournament. He inherited a significant sum from his godfather, who was called Sirius Black. And so by the time he graduated from school, he had a bit more. And then he went on to have a really great career. He landed a job as an auror, which is one of the most prestigious jobs in the wizarding world. And by the time of the famous play that's still in the West End, Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, he's 37 and he's head of the Department of Magical Law Enforcement. So you would think that Harry at 40 should be set, you know, well set for a comfortable retirement, unless he's spent too much. So you could possibly have a look at his spending habits within the books. He did have a bit of a tendency to splash out on his friends, but he did also have friends who came from very sort of poor families. So he, you know, wealth and poverty are key themes in the books. His best mate, Ron, comes from a family where they have to live very, very frugally. And I think that may have chimed well with a lot of millennials, because we know that the FIRE movement has taken off.
FIRE standing for?
For financial independence, retire early.
Yeah.
So they're all trying to cut back in the hope that they can retire at 40. Not many will make that, but it's a key trend.
Yes, I mean, so it is an issue for 40-year-olds, but a lot, you know, many 40-year-olds may not have given much thought, perhaps, to their retirement plans, how they're going to get there at the very end, except for those who are automatically in a pension. But you probably need to do a bit more thinking about that.
Yeah. I mean, I think by the time you reach age 40, it's a really significant milestone for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You haven't given much thought to retirement planning. You've been trying to get on the property ladder, or you've been trying to support a growing family and small children. You've maybe had a partner who's had to go part-time or stop work for the kids. And of course, you know, most of us don't have inheritances to fall back or win amazing competitions and win loads of dosh. So, I think it's a key moment to examine your finances.
One of the points is, of course, longevity, because as we know, as fans of the books will know, that wizards have expected to live until around 150 years old. But it's not just a problem for wizards, is it?
No, I mean, they're known to live a very long time. Dumbledore lived to be 150. They can do all sorts of magic to help their physical symptoms disappear or recover quickly from broken limbs, etc. But I think, you know, that point about life expectancy is really important because people do tend to underestimate it. And women in particular, according to Interactive Investors research, we found do tend to underestimate how long they're going to live when the statistics actually show that they're going to live longer than men on average. I think, you know, that's one factor to take into account. And of course, you've got to have some kind of plan as to how you're going to sort your finances out at 40. I mean, the obvious, you know, list of financial spells you need to cast are paying off your expensive debts, building your cash buffer, putting the right insurance in place. And then, you know, there's the really hard tasks are basically having a place where you can live mortgage or rent free by the time you retire and also having enough income to live on when you get there. And those are the two that require the detailed planning. And I'm afraid if you're starting age 40, you probably, starting to save for retirement at age 40, you probably need to put aside a significant amount of your income. And it might feel a bit painful. I mean, I don't want to shock people, but I'm going to, because I think you need to have about 20% of your income being regularly stashed aside for retirement. Mm. That's if you've done nothing up to this age. If that sounds just too difficult, then I think you have to work towards that. So think, well, if I can't do that now, maybe I can do it by the end of the decade. I can be stashing aside that much when finances might be a bit freer and the kids are a bit older, etc.
Fantastic. That makes a lot of sense for all the muggles among our listeners. Thanks very much there to Moira O'Neill, Head of Personal Finance at an Interactive Investor. You can read her column, which is a lot of fun, on ft.com/money. For most people, the motivation behind doing a dry January is losing a few pounds in weight by giving up booze. However, financial expert Andrew Hagger from the website MoneyComms has looked at the pounds you could add to your wallet by going on the wagon. And he joins me now over the line. Happy New Year, Andrew.
Happy New Year to you. Thank you.
Now, you've taken a close look at the amount an average couple could save by not drinking and how far they could travel potentially on the proceeds. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, this joint piece of research with Caxton, the travel money firm, we looked at dry January initially and thought, maybe 1 month isn't enough, not very exciting. So we decided to look at, you know, how much you could save if you gave up the booze for longer and actually, you know, if you wanted to actually use that money to pay for holiday, where it would take you. So on the sort of lower end of the scale, if you gave up 5 weeks, you could get a 2-night trip to Amsterdam. If you managed to go for 4 months, then you can then get a 7-night trip to Naples. And if you're really, really good and you can keep it going for the full year, then you can end up with a fully inclusive trip to Jamaica, Montego Bay. So, you know, there's a big incentive, big carrot for you there.
So when you've done your calculations, there are quite a few variables in the £44 a week figure. Some of our readers might enjoy their higher quality tipple, so fine wines, or they might choose to drink in pubs rather than at home. And then in that case, presumably the potential savings are even greater.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite difficult to put an average that works for everybody. And you're right, it will depend if you buy, whether you buy your drink in a supermarket or whether you buy it in a bar or restaurant. And also depends on where you live. So, you know, in the rural parts of the UK, it's not going to be as expensive as the big cities. So, yeah, exactly. Those savings could be much more. I mean, we've set a bottle of wine in a pub for £14. And I know in London and big cities, that can be way more than that. So, yeah.
So can you give us a sense of what your average couple was drinking?
So we based this on, so we looked at the NHS digital health survey to get an idea of the number of units people drank, and then we sort of converted that into drink. And that it looks at about 8 pints of beer and one bottle of wine, and that's per couple per week. So, you know, I think, and I spoke to a few of my friends about this, and they sort of said, well, yeah, that's not far out.
Yeah. Some of my colleagues in the office have commented on the irony of giving up drink for a year in order to splash out on an all-inclusive holiday. I suppose there's a wider lesson here, isn't there?
Yeah, I absolutely get that. But I think the key thing here is that, you know, if you make savings on a small, regular basis, they can quickly add up. And actually, you know, it's quite surprising what you can achieve, you know, even if you just give up for 2-3 months. So that, you know, it's worth doing, and it's not just, you know, you don't have to spend it on a holiday. We had a guy contact us to say that he did a dry 2019 for the whole year last year, and actually cleared £5,000 worth of his personal debt. So, you know, there's plenty of things you can put that money towards.
Very good. You also advise people a good way of saving, if you want to do this, is to put your savings into a separate account to avoid the temptation of spending them. Where can you currently get the best rates on those sorts of accounts?
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of options I'd look at the moment. There's Afford Money, which pays 1.35%, as does Marcus from Goldman Sachs, pays the same rate. Both accounts that you can open quickly online. And I think it is important to have it separate, so you can actually sort of see your money build up. I think that encourages you to keep going. Otherwise, you put it in your bank account, it gets muddled up and you don't really see what you're achieving.
Well, thanks very much there to Andrew Hagger, founder of MoneyComps. And you can read the full article on ft.com/money. Staying with the January health kick, an extra expense that many people consider at this time of year is joining a gym. Owen McSweeney, a former FT intern, has been trying to find the best value option. And he's written about his financial workout in the pages of this week's FT Money section. Welcome, Owen.
Hi, thanks, James.
One thing you've found is that the sort of intense competition in the gym market means that you can now often get a really good deal, particularly if you live in a big city.
Yeah, exactly. And what I found it was when I went on my hunt for different gyms and when I was speaking to owners is that the gym market now is bigger than it ever was before. So, for example, the UK market is valued at more than 5 billion, 90 billion in revenues generated per year. In the US market, this has actually tripled in the last 20 years. So it's really growing. And over the last 10 years, we've seen really strong competition in this area, which means that low-cost fitness clubs have moved into the market and squeezed it. So the middle market isn't there as it was and not as strong as it was before. So you can get gym memberships in the city centre in places like Pure Gym or the Gym Group for maybe even as little as £15 a month. And they sort of range then, I would say the average is £35. It goes all the way up to £50 a month. And the joining fees, which can sometimes be a bit of a sting, are actually quite low now too. So you're looking at maybe £15, £20, £25. So quite a low price to be able to keep fit, while before you might have been paying £100 a month or £80 a month, which would really not have been feasible on a graduate salary in London. For example, you have low-cost gyms now, such as Energy Fitness, 24-Hour Fitness, Anytime Fitness. The real advantage that I found from having all these gyms in one place were the free trials. So this wouldn't work in a small town or even a small city where you only have a handful of gyms. But when, for example, in the FT, if you Google mapped now gym near me, you'd probably have a couple of dozen within a square mile. Mm. And that means you can go to DW Fitness and use their 3-day free trial. You might be able to go to another DW Fitness and use their 3-day free trial, go to 24-Hour Fitness, Nuffield Health. And the advantage of this, first of all, I guess, is you can sort of gym free for a little while, but it also gives you a really good indication of what these gyms are offering and how their offerings suit you as well. And I think it's absolutely imperative when you're looking for a gym that you do use these free trials to your advantage, because afterwards you've then made a connection with the gym. They're going to want to keep you in this competitive market. They're going to want to keep you on board. It's really easy to negotiate prices. So you might get a waiver, for example, on the membership fees. you might get the first month free, and you might even be able to go on a premium contract, which would give you added benefits like, I don't know, would you call them benefits, but say free flavored water that you can get at the gym, free classes, free PT sessions. And something like that is definitely worth negotiating with your gym after your free trial. But I would say the first step is get on those free trials, try out different gyms and look at the ones that suit your price plan, first of all, and then also your gym needs.
That's very intriguing. Obviously, one of the things you've included in this is this big trend towards fitness apps and live classes that take place on devices, as it were. Mm-hmm. Can you explain how that works and what the finances look like?
Well, I guess it's worth describing why this digital disruption has taken place. So first of all, the industry became very competitive. Boutique studios, to distinguish themselves, started offering various things like retreats, functional high-intensity workouts, even sleep coaching, but these can be very expensive. So, for example, Equinox might put you back £240 a month, which is obviously way out of reach for a young professional or even just a professional in general. That's a very, very expensive cost. So what I found is that digital entrepreneurs have now created apps such as Fitu, which is a group fitness app, which allows freelance trainers advertise their workouts at any time, any location in London. You pay a one-time fee for that class. It might be £5, £6, £7. You might do Pilates on the South Bank. You might do a spin class by London Bridge. And it's really flexible for someone who's working in London to be able to do these classes. Maybe you say you do a spin class, you quite like it. Maybe your gym might offer free spin classes. And it's really useful for someone who doesn't maybe want to go on a gym contract or maybe wants to try and find out what type of workouts work for them. Also, another one is ClassPass. So I didn't actually use ClassPass, but I have heard from other people that it's very, very useful in that basically it's like Spotify. You do a subscription service, it gives you access to about 30,000 fitness studios and gyms worldwide. At the moment, they're doing a one-month free trial. It can be a little bit expensive after that, but I would definitely recommend trying the one-month free trial. See if it works for you. You can get it for as cheap as £15, but if you want more classes, you're going to have to expect to pay more. What I found, what was most useful for me, was these cheap gyms that I spoke about earlier. They still offer free classes, over 200 a month in some cases, which can be incredibly useful for someone who might not have the motivation to do a single gym session by themselves, but they might want to go to a gym class with other people, meet new people, and also have a gym instructor show them exactly what they need to be doing. Especially for beginners, I would highly recommend these because, as we all know, you can go back to the gym in January, you're not very used to it, you decide to do a deadlift and a squat or a squat, you pull your back because you haven't done it properly. Yeah. So it is definitely worthwhile also trying out these free classes that these cheap gyms offer before you go looking at the online stuff and the videos, because even though you might think you're doing it right, it's always good to have a gym instructor look and
absolutely
say it to you.
And one of the big questions when you're talking about contracts is, should you pay for a whole year up front, given that the one thing we all know about gym usage is that everyone piles in Jan and Feb and then sort of gives up in March and April. Is there anything to be gained from a longer contract?
So there definitely are some tempting discounts if you are to take a longer contract. For example, when I was looking, generally it's about a 10% discount if you're to take a 12-month contract over a one-month rolling contract. And they'll also generally kind of give you the first month free, which is a lovely little bonus. I mean, that's another 12th off the overall price. But there are great disadvantages to fixed memberships as well. If you're someone like me who's a bit transient, for example, I've been moving jobs recently, I've been moving apartments recently, it doesn't make sense for me to go on a 12-month contract. If I wanted to cancel, it can be costly in that you might only get 50% back. It can be really difficult, and then they make it purposely difficult, obviously, because they want to keep you on board. What I find works best for me is a monthly rolling contract. It's a little bit more expensive, but for me, it's definitely worth it. And also, what I find particularly useful about the growth of gym chains is the fact that they now offer different gyms in different locations. So, for example, Anytime Fitness have something like 4,000 locations globally. For example, if I was to join Pure Gym, I'd only have to pay £55 and I could use any of their gyms in London, which means I can go to the gym near work, I can go to the gym near home. If I'm traveling someday, I have to go to gym somewhere else in Birmingham or Southampton, Liverpool or Manchester, that becomes very useful as well. And In the end, what I did was I joined one of these low-cost gyms. I'm only paying £35 a month. I supplement this then with some free classes, with a bit of Fitu as well on the side when I want to do something a little bit different. And that works for me, and it might not work for other people, but what allowed me to decide that was doing those free trials in the first place.
Very good, indeed. Thanks very much there to Owen McSweeney, who's looking extremely fit beside me in the studio. You can read his article now on ft.com/money and in the money section of the weekend FT newspaper this Saturday. That's it from the Money Show this week. If you want to contact our team of writers or financial experts, email us money@ft.com. You can follow us on Twitter for the latest news update. Our handle is @ftmoney. We'll be back next week at the usual time. Goodbye.